modesty in our dress and in our speech, we cannot at the same time sort of elevate ourselves, put ourselves on a pillar, that we are an example of modesty and that we sort of look at some other people. And this, now this is maybe especially woman to woman. We cannot start to make assumptions about other women. So let's say a typical thing would be we observe, we know, see a woman, maybe our friends, maybe someone in our family or someone on the street. We observe that they, for example, do not wear hijab the way we do. Maybe we even observe that they're wearing no hijab. That's possible, depending on the country we're in. Anyway, and then sometimes we rush to the assumption that because they're not wearing such and such, that has then an implication for their character. And I'll just mention an example, so I know that I did once observe a woman who didn't really have special hijab of any kind, very little hijab. And you know, maybe we would think, oh, that's probably not a very religious person. But I observed that woman go into a sort of a smaller shrine, also called an imamzada, for I think it was the midday and afternoon prayers. And yeah, so we have to be very careful. And this is obviously a thing. So we have the beautiful aspect of being modest, but we then also have to be very aware that we don't fall into other dangers. So what we are doing is very good, but we also need to focus on ourselves and not sort of assume or judge things about others. So inshallah, this is just a reminder for all of us. And I'd say especially as women. And that was it for today. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of AZ here on iBinks Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Bird song I offer. Good day to all our dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio, your trusted companion for reflection, dialogue, and discovery. And now we have some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran is considered one of the most significant sources which gave rise to the development of the Islamic art and architecture, especially the so-called Quranic arts of calligraphy and illumination. The Holy Quran is divided into 30 equal parts. There are 114 chapters or surah and 6,236 verses or ayahs. The longest chapter of the Quran is Al-Baqarah with 286 verses, which is the second surah of the Holy Quran, while the shortest surah is Al-Kawthar with only 3 verses. Now we'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. Be with us. For the beginning, enjoy another segment of our diverse radio productions. After that, we'll have Foresight with host Sayyid Shahriyar Naqvi, joined by various famous English speakers and lecturers. This program focuses on the practical application of worshipping Allah and servitude to God in relation to addressing contemporary challenges. Get ready for a truly insightful discussion. Next up, Round the World with Reporters take you on a global adventure. This program transports you with fascinating reports from correspondents worldwide, covering culture, politics, and more. Round the World with Reporters connects you to the world's pulse with the stories that inform and inspire. Following that, we will have another segment of radio productions for this broadcast. Stay tuned for the next segment of our radio production.
When autumn arrives in Iran, a familiar face begins to drift through the air, borrowed from a famous poem and whispered by almost everyone. Autumn, the king of seasons. And today we're setting out to meet this king face to face. As the last golden days of this romantic season slip away, we're heading north toward a province where forest, mountain, and sea weave together a tapestry of magical colors, a place that calms the spirit and awakens the senses. Early December, and once again we're leaving the bustling capital of Tehran, this time steering northeast. Our destination, the lush province of Golestan. We're taking the road, and barring a sudden snowstorm or a winter blizzard, we should reach our destination, that is the provincial capital of Gorgan, in just about 6 hours. Please stay with us. Golestan is the modern name of a historic region known across centuries as Gorgan, Astarabad, and Jorjan. Up until about 30 years ago, it was part of Mazandaran province. Many of its current cities are relatively young, villages that gradually grew into towns. But the cities of Gorgan and Gombad-e-Kavus tell older stories. Golestan is the most ethnically and religiously diverse province in the country. Home to communities who speak different languages, follow different faiths, and yet live side by side in remarkable harmony. Because of this rich patchwork of peoples and traditions, the province is often called the cultural capital of Iran's ethnic communities. About 40% of the population is Turkmen, and their settlements cover nearly half the province's land. Persian speakers, Sistanis, Baluchis, Turks, Mazandaranis, and Kazakhs all contribute to the province's cultural mosaic. Mr. Amir Yusefi, president of Gorgan Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines, and Agriculture.
Golestan province covers about 20,000 square kilometers, with a population of roughly 2 million. What really makes it stand out is its diversity. You have a wide range of ethnic groups living together here, so much so that people call it the rainbow of Iran's ethnicities. Shia and Sunni, different communities all side by side in a peaceful way. This has created a very special environment for Gulistan. It means the province has strong potential in tourism and attracting visitors. And when you add its rich natural landscapes, these all become key advantages. So whether we're talking about investment from inside Iran or from abroad, there's real capacity here that people can tap into.
Our first stop, a beautiful relic from the late Qajar era, the Amir Latifi House right in the heart of Gorgan. This magnificent two-story structure is a national heritage site, and today it hosts Gorgan's Handicraft Museum, one of its kind in the entire province.
But Gulistan's history stretches even farther back, far enough to take us to one of Iran's greatest ancient wonders, the Great Wall of Gorgan. This massive defensive structure is the longest architectural monument of ancient Iran, and after China's Great Wall, the second longest historical wall in the world. Stretching roughly 200 kilometers across the Gorgan Plain and the Turkmen Steppe, it dates back about 1700 years to the Sasanian Empire. Built during the reigns of Parviz and Anushiravan, it once stood firm against the Heftalite nomads who threatened Iran's northern borders. Mr. Ali Asghar Tahmasebi, governor of Gulistan province.
In terms of tourism and ecotourism, Gulistan really is exceptional. We have natural resorts and landscapes that are still largely untouched, where visitors from across Iran and abroad can both enjoy the scenery and even invest. Our wetlands are stunning and truly unique on a global scale, and there is huge potential to make much better use of these assets. From an industrial perspective, Gulistan also has a very strategic location. We are close to Central Asia and border countries like Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan, with trade routes that stretch all the way to China along what used to be the Silk Road. And then there is the Great Wall of Gorgan. After the Great Wall of China, this is one of the most remarkable defensive walls in the world, around 230 kilometers long, running from the eastern shore of the Caspian Sea to Gonabad. It has now been inscribed as a World Heritage Site, which adds even more cultural and historical value to the province.
Gulistan's natural setting is just as impressive. Thanks to the Caspian Sea on one side and the Alborz Mountains on the other, the province hosts everything from dense broadleaf forests at higher elevations to fertile farmlands across the plains, ending in the vast steppe grasslands stretching toward Turkmenistan. Juniper and yew forests enhance the rugged beauty of Gulistan's southern reaches. Mr. Yusufi highlighted the province's key tourism attractions to both visitors and prospective investors.
Tourism in Gulistan is really promising, especially thanks to its unspoiled nature. We have good infrastructure for visitors, from suitable hotels to leisure facilities like amusement parks and other attractions that help draw tourists in. Beyond that, there is strong potential in health tourism. Our hospitals are well equipped, and compared to many of our neighboring countries that lack sufficient medical facilities, Iran can offer high-quality treatment at much more affordable prices. For any investor choosing a destination, two things matter the most: security and profitability. Gulistan offers both. When you combine safety, good returns, and all these natural and medical advantages, the province becomes a very attractive option for investors.
Gulistan occupies a unique strategic location. It borders Turkmenistan to the north, touches North Khorasan to the east, and links to Mazandaran and Semnan to the south. It has also become a major north-south corridor connecting Iran to India, Russia, and Europe. With with the Incheburun Free Trade Zone, vital rail and road corridors, and strong agricultural and industrial capacity, Gulistan is poised to become a powerhouse of foreign trade. Expanding border facilities, completing the Bojnord-Mashhad Railway, strengthening border markets, and supporting local products such as saffron and livestock goods could turn Gulistan into the unofficial export capital of northern Iran.
Gulistan's free trade zone is one of the country's most untouched and secure areas. It's located in the Incheburun Free Zone on the border between Iran and Turkmenistan. Right now, more than 517 domestic and foreign investors have applied to set up companies in Gulistan and this zone. Over 150 of those company registrations have already been finalized and licensed with a mix of Iranian and international firms among them.
The launch of the Kazakhstan-Turkmenistan-Iran Railway, which passes through Incheburun, has added rail-based customs services to the region. As soon as the passenger terminal becomes fully active and small-scale border trade expands, Gulistan's economic pulse will beat even stronger. Mr. Hassan Malik Hosseini, head of the Incheburun Free Trade Zone.
The Incheburun Free Zone is considered a third-generation free zone in Iran. The first generation was mainly trade-oriented. The second focused on production, but third-generation zones combine all of that, trade, manufacturing, services, and add a new layer. They are smart and digital-driven. So we see ourselves in that category, and our studies and planning are mostly based on smart systems, digital platforms, and building a strong digital economy.
The province's industrial sector, especially petrochemicals, mining machinery, and food industries, offer strong opportunities for regional cooperation. The Gulistan Petrochemical Complex near Incheburun produces 1.5 million tons annually and uses rail connections to export to Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. Mr. Malik Hosseini told us more about the significance of the province's free zone.
The Incheburun Free Zone sits at the crossroads of several international transport corridors. The most important is the KTR corridor. It starts in Kazakhstan, runs about 150 kilometers there, then roughly 500 kilometers through Turkmenistan, and finally reaches Incheburun. This is a truly international route that links east and west and connects to many countries worldwide. By rail, we are only about 12 to 13 days away from China, which is a very short transit time. That's a major advantage for both imports of essential goods and export of products from Iran.
Gulistan also hosts the largest iodine production plant in West Asia, serving chemical industries, pharmaceuticals, and petrochemicals. The province satisfies national demand and exports iodine to multiple European and Asian countries.
In Gulistan province, we have 24 industrial parks spread across all our cities and even many districts, all equipped with water, electricity, and gas. Investors can also operate in a free trade zone, where they benefit from 20 years of tax exemption. A large share of what they produce can be exported to Central Asia, the Eurasian region, and Turkmenistan. Many Central Asian countries are in a phase of construction and development, so they can make extensive use of the products and capacities generated here.
Gulistan's main export markets include Iraq, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan, countries that together take more than half of its exported goods. With stronger branding and targeted marketing, especially towards Central Asia and the EU, Gulistan's export potential could grow dramatically.
I think one of the most attractive opportunities right now is investment in the Incheburun Free Trade Zone. It offers 20 years of tax exemptions, strong guarantees for investment security, and easy access to neighboring markets that need the kinds of goods that can be produced and exported from here. On top of that, we have strong potential in tourism, where conditions for investment are very favorable and various incentives have been introduced, including low-interest loans and financial facilities for those who want to operate in this area. Another key area is agro-processing. Golestan already produces a wide range of agricultural products that are often exported as raw materials. By investing in processing industries inside the province, we can create more value locally while also serving export markets more effectively.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines. Welcome to the news section of the program, where we take a look at some news headlines from different news outlets. Tehran Times. Export from Golestan province rises 32% in 5 months on year. The value of non-oil export from Golestan province in the northeast of Iran rose 32% during the first 5 months of the current Iranian calendar year, that is from March 21st to August 22nd, as compared to the same period of time in the past year, a provincial official announced. Shahriyar Shahriyari, the Director General of the province's Customs Department, said that over 209,274 tons of non-oil goods worth $114,261,503 were exported from the province in the five-month period of this year, with a 44% growth in weight year-on-year. Isna, Arakchi, Caspian Sea as vital to Iran as Persian Gulf, ties with Russia strategic partnership. Foreign Minister Abbas Arakchi has underlined that the Caspian Sea is strategically important to Iran as the Persian Gulf, noting that littoral countries have engaged in joint cooperation for years to address shared interests and concerns. Speaking at the opening of the first international meeting of the governors of the Caspian littoral provinces in the northern Iranian city of Rasht on Tuesday, Arakchi emphasized that Iran's neighbors are a top priority, adding that the principle lies at the heart of the country's foreign policy. He highlighted that Iran shares borders with 15 countries, both on land and sea, and has particularly strong relations with nations in the Persian Gulf and Caspian Sea regions. Arakchi noted that Iran enjoys excellent relations with all Caspian Sea countries and has established strategic partnerships with some, including Russia. IRNA. Iran officials say launch of joint trade zone with Turkmenistan will bring development. The governor of northern Iranian province of Golestan has announced that establishment of a joint free trade zone with Turkmenistan will bring development for both countries. Consultations about the issue are underway. Ali Mohammad Zangane made the remarks at a local ceremony on August 24th while elaborating on the latest situation of Incheburun free zone in north of the country. The project of Incheburun, known as a gateway to Central Asia, will create 47,000 job opportunities after being fully implemented, the governor said. The project will also help development of industrial units, according to the official. The launch of joint free trade zone in Incheburun will raise exchange of goods through railways to 13.7 million metric tons, he said, adding the exchange of cargoes via roads will also reach 6.3 million metric tons. Exchange of commodities from Golestan province has passed 1 million metric tons, he said, while expressing satisfaction over the report. This brings us to the end of this section. Please stay tuned as we go back to our main narrative. Golestan's ethnic diversity comes alive most vividly in its handicrafts. More than 40 traditional crafts are produced here, each shaped by the deep Asian heritage of Iran's peoples.
These crafts don't just preserve culture, they generate income, employment, and export opportunities. More than 35,000 artisans are active in the province, creating a vast foundation for production. Golestan's handicrafts are among Iran's most exportable goods to the Persian Gulf and can even compete with Chinese products. They are shipped to Germany, the United States, Canada, Sweden, Iraq, China, Turkmenistan, Japan, Qatar, Afghanistan, Australia, France, the United Kingdom, the UAE, and more. If there is one missing link, it's consistent marketing and branding, an area where improvement could unlock an entirely new chapter in global visibility. At the heart of Golestan's craft tradition lies its most iconic product, the Turkmen carpet. Woven mostly by skilled Turkmen women, these carpets reflect the landscape, culture, and spiritual beliefs of the Turkmen steppe. Originally made only for household use, Turkmen carpets are creations of memory and imagination, hand-woven artworks born from the minds and stories of Turkmen mothers. Internationally renowned for their improvisational patterns, symbolic motifs, and the warm, natural qualities of wool, these carpets are considered among the finest in the world. In 2011, the Turkmen hand-woven carpets, with its more than 811 designs and symbols, was registered as National Heritage of Iran. Meanwhile, we visited the Gombad-e-Kavus Carpet Museum, where we had a brief conversation with Ms. Maryam Ak Atabay, head of the city's Office of Cultural Heritage, Tourism, and Handicrafts.
In Golestan province, the city of Gombad-e-Kavus is one of Iran's main centers for authentic Turkmen Sahara carpet weaving. For years, skilled local women have kept this art alive, creating carpets that are both traditional and historically rich. During the 2010s, and especially after the brick Gombad-e-Kavus Tower in Gombad-e-Kavus was inscribed as a World Heritage Site in 2013, the idea of establishing a carpet museum gained momentum. The museum was eventually set up by the Golestan Department of Culture, Heritage, Tourism and Handicrafts to showcase the original Turkmen carpets and introduce the culture and identity of the region. Gombad-e-Kavus is part of the Turkmen Sahara region, and many of the local women here still weave carpets with completely authentic Turkmen designs. Exports in this field are already quite strong. With the Incheburun Free Zone, we have a real opportunity to attract more investors who can focus specifically on those traditional patterns and help expand production and export of genuine Turkmen carpets.
Towering over this cultural landscape is perhaps Golestan's most recognizable landmark, Gombad-e-Kavus Tower. This 53-meter-high brick monument was built in 1006 AD for Qabus ibn Voshmgir, a Ziyarit ruler, scholar, and patron of the arts.
Standing near the ruins of ancient Jurjan, once a flourishing center of science and culture, this tower is all that survived the Mongol invasions of the 14th and 15th centuries. Its tapering cylindrical form and striking conical roof make it a masterpiece of early Islamic architecture, influencing structures across Iran, Anatolia, and Central Asia. Mr. Arozjon Shomali, Vice President of the Golestan Province Chamber of Commerce.
We're now in Gombad-e-Kavus, a city whose thousand-year-old tower, Mir Gombad, tells the story of a very ancient and proud history. This monument was built around the early 11th century by Shamsul Mu'ali Qabus ibn Voshki. He was a ruler known for his love of knowledge and learning, and he brought many scholars of his time here, turning this area into an important center of culture and science.
Mr. Shomali said that the cultural interconnection between Golestan and Central Asia has provided the province with a unique opportunity.
منطقه ما با منطقه آسیای میانه یک در هم آمیختگیه.
Our region has very deep historic ties with Central Asia. Just across the border, the first ancient city is Nesa. Then you reach Marv and further on Bukhara, Samarkand and Tashkent in Uzbekistan. On the other side, towards Tajikistan, you have Dushanbe. Culturally, we're very close and connected. That's why there's huge potential for tourism. Travel agencies on the other side can promote tours to this region and bring visitors here. Through my work with the Chamber of Commerce and my trips there, I can clearly see the interest. They genuinely want to come and experience our country up close.
Gulistan's economy primarily thrives on agriculture. The province plays a crucial role in Iran's food security, producing wheat, oilseeds, rice, and orchard crops. It ranks among the top producers of wheat and oilseeds nationwide, alongside major contributions in fruit, poultry, shrimp, and caviar. Mr. Haman Hashemi, Vice President of the Agriculture Commission of the Iran Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture.
Golestan's economy is heavily dependent on agriculture. The share of agriculture in the province's GDP is almost twice the national average, and the same is true for employment in this sector. We also have a very high rural production compared to most other provinces, again, close to double the national average. In fact, the number of people living in villages is almost on par with our urban population, which makes Golestan one of the most rural-based provinces in the country.
With improved processing industries, Golestan could transform into a dominant exporter of agricultural goods. It contains more than 451,000 hectares of forest, 868,205 hectares of rangeland, and about 712,000 hectares of farmland. Seven distinct climate zones allow for an astonishing variety of crops. Field crops rankings. First in soybean, sunflower, rapeseed, tobacco. Third in wheat. Fourth in rice and cotton. Eighth in sugar beet. Ninth in sesame. Orchard crops rankings. First in persimmon, greenhouse pineapple, pecan. Second in nigella, greenhouse lemon. Third in peach, strawberry, kiwi. Fourth in borage. Fifth in plum, orange. Sixth in olive. Livestock and poultry rankings. Second in chicken meat. Fourth in silk cocoons. Eighth in eggs. Tenth in red meat. Golestan's fruits and vegetables, especially kiwi, oranges, lemons, apples, bell peppers, and eggplants, have enormous potential in markets like Kazakhstan and Russia. Although Kazakhstan imports much of its produce from China and Pakistan, Golestan can compete in both quality and price. Overall, Golestan ranks as Iran's sixth largest agricultural producer and bordering the Eurasian Economic Union, has strong potential for enhanced trade and new free trade agreements.
When it comes to orchards, Golestan has a really strong position. We produce high-quality fruit, both citrus and seasonal fruits like plums and peaches that are harvested in spring and summer. The climate is very suitable, and you can really taste that in the flavor and quality of the products. There's also serious potential on the processing side. These fruits are attractive for investors in areas like juice and concentrate production, drying facilities, and similar industries. The same goes for crops like potatoes, which are harvested here in spring and summer with very good quality. All of this makes agro-processing and food production a particularly appealing field for investment in the province.
The province is also one of Iran's leading centers for shrimp and caviar production. The Caspian Sea, home to five types of the sturgeon, produces nearly 90% of the world's caviar, and Golestan alone accounts for almost half of Iran's output. Its saline groundwater and government investment make it an ideal location for expanding caviar farms.
For many years, we've been producing sturgeon and caviar here, which is one of our strongest advantages in this sector. We also have the potential to expand fish farming in cages, which could open up major new opportunities. Because of our mountainous areas, aquaculture can develop both in marine environments and in inland fish farms. And with the Gorgon Gulf, we also have very good conditions for shrimp farming. So access to the sea doesn't just support our agriculture and fisheries production. It also gives us a strategic edge for trade, especially with countries in the CIS region.
Golestan is also the beating heart of Turkmen horse breeding. This famed breed, one of the world's fastest, thrives in the plains and deserts of the Turkmen steppe. Long-framed, powerful, and genetically distinct, the Turkmen horse is prized for racing and competitive riding. Every year, the Turkmen Horse Festival in Sufyan Village draws enthusiasts from across Iran and beyond. With the right investment and expertise, the equine industry could become another strong pillar of Golestan's economy. Golestan's wonders simply overflow any television screen. To truly understand this province, to feel its colors, its history, its culture, the best thing you can do is pack your bags and set out for a journey you won't forget. Come before the King of Seasons slips away.
Thank you for joining us on our journey to Gorgon, the capital of Golestan province. Please do tune in again same times next week to see what else is on. Until next time, take care.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Tawakkul comes from the root word wakala. Wakala means...
Today, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from
Allah is the unique Arabic name.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed.
His decree, though,
this is Foresight, a program on how to worship Allah. Today's tip, the tranquility brought about by ubudiyah, the worship, the servitude, and the obedience to Allah. Welcome back, Dear friends, this is Foresight on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about the tranquility that comes about via ubudiyya, the worship, the servitude, and the obedience to the Almighty Allah. Exalted and glorified is He. So, you know, in the modern era that we live in, we find that stress, anxiety, depression, frustration, anger, all of these vices, unfortunately, are prevalent among society. Now, one of the reasons why these things have become so prevalent among society and have become so prevalent among people is because of the systems that we live in. The systems that we live in, for the most part, they are non-divine systems, and they are systems that are not, you know, created or made in order to help an individual grow psychologically and spiritually. Matter of fact, the only reason that these systems, you know, the only purpose of these systems, excuse me, is that they want to make money, or they want to develop the society again in order to make money, or it is all about power and status and position and these kind of things. And so because these systems are based upon these vices, and the ultimate goal is for a certain group of individuals to reach, you know, the peak of a certain vice, for example, greed. So what ends up happening is, in order to reach that ultimate peak of that vice, what they end up doing is they end up misusing and mistreating and taking advantage of and abusing the common masses. And so that is why you find that these systems inherently do not care about the psychological or spiritual condition of the people. They could care less, you know, if the people suffer. For them, all that is important is power and money and wealth and, you know, greed and these kind of things. So what that results in, of course, is the common masses being taken advantage of, and that, of course, results in the suffering of the common masses, and that suffering is intimately connected to stress and anxiety and depression and these kind of ills that many people across the world are facing. So I guess if we reverse the equation, it is because we live in societies that the systems are not catered toward humanity. So for example, the pure Muhammadan Islam, of course, is specifically catered to help the psychological and spiritual growth of every single human being. And so any system that is based upon the pure Muhammadan Islam will and should cater to and help and strengthen and support the psychological and spiritual needs of a human being. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Today's question asks, why do Muslims pray? One of the most important rulings in Islam is the daily prayer that Muslims must partake in. Maybe you have seen Muslims in large groups say prayer together on TV. You might think it looks a little weird because there is so much action involved in prayer. Why don't Muslims just clasp their hands together, become reverent, and speak their prayers silently? Why must there be a loud call to prayer and a set time for these prayers to be said in? This is because Muslims all around the world pray the same prayer, in the same way, and at the same times. In total, there are 5 separate prayers that Muslims recite in Arabic. This is so that there can be conformity for all prayers said. But the true beauty of the prayer lies in the meaning, and so many Muslims choose to look up the translation of the prayer in their own language so that they truly know what they are reciting. The reason for the actual prayer is so that Muslims always focus on being kind and doing the right thing, no matter the circumstances. In Islam, it is believed that the world is a testing ground for humans, in which they have to always choose for the right over the wrong. It is also believed that humans, after they die and on Judgment Day, will be judged based on their actions on earth. The prayer, therefore, acts as a sort of shield against wrongdoings that might tempt the people. They help remind people that their life on earth is short and serve as a means to put life in perspective. Think of it this way. Let's say you are sitting in an exam at school. Initially, you know that this is an exam and that you have to do your best in order to pass with a good grade. Throughout the exam, however, you also have the teacher supervising you and also a clock to tell you how much more time you have left. The teacher and the clock both reinforce the fact in your mind that you are taking an exam so that you do not slack off, dawdle, or cheat. The Muslim daily prayers serve the same purpose. They allow you to connect with God on several occasions throughout the day. They also help you remember that you are on earth for a short period of time and that you are responsible for your actions at all times. Now imagine during your exam, your teacher would not be there to supervise and there would be no means to tell the time during your exam. Would you still be trying as hard to finish your exam well? Or would you start talking with your classmates, cheat, or even take out your sandwich and indulge because you think you have the time to do so? Without daily prayers, Muslims would have a much harder time focusing on their actual purpose in life. They would not strive to be the best version of themselves that they could be and would indulge in the non-essential things in life. So why not try praying once in a while? Try taking a minute or two, a couple times a day, just to focus on a connection with the Creator.
Welcome back, dear friends. So we were talking a little bit about how ubudiyya, the worship and the servitude and the obedience to Allah, is a source of tranquility. So now when we kind of talked a little bit as a fundamental introduction to the subject by talking about the systems and how they promote stress and anxiety and depression and the ills that are within these categories. Now, we find that the Holy Quran has very beautifully said that the hearts find rest, تطمئن القلوب, in Allah's remembrance. So this is a very beautiful statement, it's very profound, and this is one of the, you know, curing, miraculous prescriptions for all of the stress and anxiety and depression and anger that human beings across the world are facing. You know, when we look at, for example, the people of Palestine, the people of Palestine in the last 2 years or so have faced an incredibly horrible and atrocious and shocking genocide. And it continues to the present day. You know, in the summers, these poor individuals are dying from the heat. And in the, you know, winter, they are faced with rains and flooding of their tents, incredibly, you know, cold weather while they are living in tents, along with, of course, you know, the basic civilian infrastructure that has been destroyed, basic facilities, basic needs they are not able to meet those. And, you know, when you look, for example, into the starvation issue, lack of food, lack of fuel, and, of course, the death and the murder of their loved ones, their parents, their brothers and sisters, their grandparents, their children, their grandchildren, their neighbors, all being killed and murdered, you know, for over 2 years nonstop. When you look at these individuals and you speak with them, one of the things that is very highlighted and it is very prominent is their tranquility. Yes, they are grieving. Yes, they are sad. Yes, they are suffering. Yes, they are facing trials and tribulations beyond imagination. Yes, you know, there are calamities that are befalling them, but still you will see that they have a sort of tranquility. And when you listen to what they say, they will always say, praise be to Allah. They will always say, Allah has the best of protectors. Allah has the best of witnesses. Allah has the best of helpers. Allah has the best of supporters. Allah will take our revenge. Allah will save us. Hence, you see, it is this remembrance that they have and their constant remembrance of the Almighty Allah which has brought them the tranquility to be able to overcome all of the anxiety and stress and depression and trials and tribulations that they are facing. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Foresight. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah. Oh.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olimi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
At least 110 Palestinian abductees have been killed while in Israeli detention. That's according to a new report. It said many of the detainees are regularly subjected to torture, assault, medical neglect, and malnutrition.
After October 7th, Israel's systematic violence and torture against Palestinian prisoners increased rapidly, and this is not only reflected by the increase of fatalities, but also in the witnesses we hear from and the ex-prisoners. Gaza's prisoners are still subjected to more brutal and inhumane treatment, which was noticed more clearly since Ben-Gvir came into office. His policies are reflecting his own extremism.
Ben-Gvir, who oversees Israel's prison system, openly boasts about rising fatalities in Israeli jails. Those close to Ben-Gvir maintain that the hawkish Israeli minister is proud to have aggravated conditions for Palestinian abductees.
I was in prison for nearly 2 years, during which I was subjected to extreme torture and medical neglect. For 4 months, I had scabies, and they refused to give any medicine. Starvation was another method of torture. We would go for days without food, or with the minimum that kept us alive. We witnessed the death of many people inside the prison. One prisoner was Dr. Mossab Hania, who was tortured to death for his last name only.
In addition to the 18,500 documented arrests since October 2023, there are an unknown number taken as part of an Israeli policy of enforced disappearances. 2 years on, thousands of those disappeared from Gaza may no longer be alive. For the 110 Palestinian prisoners who never made it home, the suffering may have ended. However, for the thousands who are still behind the Israeli bars, the agony persists. Ghad Ibrahim, Deir al-Balah City, Palestine.
Again, 120 people were murdered in a massacre by the RSF militia as they attacked a kindergarten, a village, and a hospital. Most of the dead were children aged 3, 4, and 5.